As Brenna said, this morning we are continuing in sermon series we started last week and working through the Psalms. And this morning is a lament psalm. Now, I heard a joke once that said, what do you get if you play a country song backwards? Now, I don't remember the exact punchline, but it was basically this. You get your dog back, you get your truck back, you get your house back, you get your best friend back, and you get your wife back. I guess that would go well with the 1970s country song that said, if you want to have the perfect country song, you have to talk about mama, trains, trucks, prisons, and getting drunk. And you have the perfect country song. Now, something that probably seems unrelated, and if you live at my house, you'd understand that Brenna puts up with a lot of that too. Please trust me. I'll do my best to bring them together for you in just a few minutes. How many times have you been to the doctor because there is something that is bothering you? Now, if you have, like I, you realize that when you go to see the doctor, you have to be honest with them. And you have to tell them everything you can, because if you don't, if they don't know that which is bothering you that is pertinent to the situation, how do you expect them to be able to help you? Well, this morning we're going to look at what is termed a lament psalm. And in many ways, I'm afraid it might sound like the perfect country song. Commentator Leslie Allen says that laments are a poignant prayer wrung from personal crisis, such as a severe sickness, a social victimization from which the sufferer seeks to be set free. In the same line, there are several features. If you study the book of Psalms and you study the laments, there are several features that are present in most of the lament psalms. The problem is nobody quite agrees on what those are, and so I found lists of 4, of 5, and of 6 features of what's present in a lament psalm, but probably the most common is 5, and Mark Furtado gives this list, and I'm going to read what he says with what I have put into list form. He says, the fundamental movement of the lament is from plea to praise. The plea typically begins with an address to God and an initial cry for help. Then follows the recounting of the distress in the terms of a complaint about one's circumstances, one's enemies, or God himself, joined by a confession of sin or innocence, and that depends on the circumstances. The heart of the plea is a petition for God to act in a saving way on behalf of the psalmist. The final note, however, is usually praise in the form of a concise hymn of praise or a vow to praise or a statement of confidence about being heard. And this, I would add, is the direction of the whole of the Psalms, from lament to praise, from plea to praise. This morning, we're going to look at Psalm 13, if you want to turn there, Psalm 13, as an example of personal lament. This is what the psalmist, the psalm title says it. Well, I'm going to read the psalm title because I think they go back far enough that they're very likely accurate. The title says, "For the Director of Music, a Psalm of David. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, O Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death. My enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice at my fall. But I trust in your unfailing love, and my heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, for he has done good to me." Now, while in this particular lament, we don't see clearly all five of those characteristics of the lament, I think that we can learn to lament ourselves if we pay attention to this lament in Psalm 13. It begins with the cry for help. The psalmist, David, he cries out to God, and if you paid attention in those first two verses, there are four times that the psalmist cries out and he asks a question. How long? How long? But as he does this, there is something else that's taking place. He is acknowledging who he is talking to. Because in the first verse, it's, "How long, O Lord? How long, O Lord?" He's commenting, he's identifying to those who will read the psalm, those who will sing the psalm, those who will pray the psalm after him. He is acknowledging in his own spirit that he is praying to God, the covenant God of Israel. Not to just any random deity that might be listening, not to any of the gods that the nations around may worship, but he is praying to the covenant God of Israel, Yahweh. And he wants to make sure that we go to him. But it's not just that he's acknowledging who he's speaking to, he's asking a question. He's asking a very real question of the covenant God of Israel, and that is, how long will this go on? How long will the night seem black? How long will the day seem unbearable? How long will my enemies come at my door? How long? How long? And we may gloss over it as simply a question, but it is more than a question. It is also a statement acknowledging the fact that he understands that things are not right in this world, and only God can make them so. There is no politician who can make the world right. There is no police force, there is no army, there is no group of people who can look at the world and say, oh, things are right. The psalmist is acknowledging, and Psalm written by David, David who would be recognized as the greatest king of Israel and the one by whom all others are measured. David himself, and we don't know when, but at some point, David says, God, I know things are not right, and only you can do something about it. And so he prays this lament, and he begins with his cry to help for God. You know, one of the things that's important to note about the Psalms as a whole, and lament psalms in particular, is, well, there is this feature that drives commentators crazy. But at the same time, it is a blessing to pastors and parishioners who can be thankful for this very same characteristic. And that characteristic is the fact that very few of the Psalms and very few of the laments in particular give concrete details about the life of the author. They give very few details about what is taking place when the psalmist is writing this psalm. And if you notice the title, it simply says it is for the choir director, and it's a psalm of David. We don't know when he wrote it. We don't know what was going on in his life in particular. And for scholars, that means they have to try to help us understand the psalm when they don't completely understand it themselves. They cannot give all of the details they would love to be able to give. Even though sometimes the titles do, there's just so much that's missing. While that drives scholars crazy, for pastors, for people who are suffering, it means that we can look at many different situations of life and we can use these psalms and still remain faithful to the text. It means that while our enemies may not be the same that David was facing when he wrote Psalm 13, it means that as we look at it, if it's a health crisis, it's appropriate. If it's the loss of a loved one, it's appropriate. If it's financial, it's appropriate. Because the Psalms, many of them are written for just that kind of purpose. They were written in a moment and something was going on, but they were written so that they could be used by the community, by members of the community, to worship and to come to God and to know how to appropriate their feelings before God. It's an address to Yahweh, but there's also a question of timing that comes in this cry for help. But the question of timing, well, how long? That's clearly a question of time. But he goes on and he says, forever? He asks the question, do I have to wait forever? And I don't think the psalmist is saying that he thinks that eternity is going to pass between his praying of the psalm and God's answer. But he's asking the question, do I have to wait until it's too late for you to do anything about it? Do I have to wait so long for you to answer my prayer that at the end I there's nothing that can be done? Do I have to wait so long that even if you do something, devastation is already set in and it really isn't any good? Because the psalmist is feeling as if it might just be that long before God answers him. And so you and I, we can ask the question, how long must I endure? How long will this last? Those are questions that we ask, and as we look at the Psalms of Laments, especially ones like Psalm 13, we find that it is very appropriate for us to go with our heartfelt question and ask God, how long? Or we might phrase it a different way, depending on the situation that we're going through. The psalmist asks how long, but we might say when. When? When will things change? When will I get well? When will I find a job? When will my child come home? When? We might ask the question, when will the situation that we're in change? And as I look at the lament, I'm reminded that that's a question, those are questions that sometimes we forget to ask. Or we were made to believe that they're questions that are wrong for us to ask. Because quite frankly, we come into a place like this and we want to rush to the end all too often, and we want to get to praise. And so we forget that sitting amongst us are those who are asking the question, how long? And sometimes we need to be willing to stop and ask the question. Sometimes we need to sing the songs that ask the question without giving us the answer. How long? But as a good lament, it doesn't simply stop with asking the question. There isn't just the cry for help, but the movement continues, and David comes to the place where he lodges his complaint. He doesn't just say, "How long, O Lord?" But then he says specifically what it is that he's asking about. He says specifically what it is that he thinks is the problem. And I think sometimes we get uncomfortable. Maybe part of the reasons that we skip the lament is because we get uncomfortable. Because as we read what David says, David accuses God. David's statement comes against God himself. He says, "Have you forgotten, or how long will you forget me, O God?" How long will you forget me, O God? Because David feels like, or maybe David even recognizes the point that we're going to look at Psalm 22. But Psalm 22, when it says, "How long have you forsaken me?" Or, "How long will you forsake me?" You see, David believes that there are times when it seems like God has forgotten us. You see, these are times when we realize that things are not as they should be, and the problem is we're trying to get back to the way things ought to be on our own. We're trying to find our way back to Eden, even if we have to get there kicking and screaming and fighting our way back. We think that things should be the way that things are supposed to be. And we look at the situations and we know they're not right. But at these times when we, like David, can say, "How long, O Lord, have you forgotten me?" we look at the situation and it seems that God is uninterested in our situation. Or God is aloof to our despair. And we don't like to think that way. We don't like to think that it's okay to acknowledge our feelings, that it seems like God has forgotten about us. But have you ever been there? Have you ever been in a place where it doesn't matter what your head knows? Your heart says, "God, you have forgotten me. God, you are not acting. God, you're not doing what I think you're supposed to do. God, where are you?" I'm sure you have. And if you haven't been there yet, you will be there one day. Where you are sitting in the pit of despair and you look and say, God, where are you? You are not here the way I think you should be. And the psalmist is like a little kid when everything is going wrong. And they say, Mom, Dad, pay attention to me. And the psalmist, David in this case, is looking and he's saying, God, pay attention to me. You are the only one who can answer. You are the only one who can do anything. Pay attention to me and pay attention to my situation. And then David says, this is what's going on. And he explains the situation and what he sees that is wrong with the situation. Because it isn't enough. It isn't enough many times for us to know what's going on, and it isn't enough to get God's attention, but we have to tell God what is wrong with the situation. And for David at that moment in time, he says that his enemies were attacking him. And scholars wonder what it was, personal enemies. And one of those times when he had personal enemies that were attacking him, and some of them look to the times when Saul was chasing David and David was fleeing for his very life. Others say, well, maybe it was a time when it wasn't David personally, but it was the nation and the enemies were raging. We don't know, but David knew. And the thing is David knows that the people of God need to know that it isn't the particular enemy that he was facing, but it's the enemies that any of them might be facing. And it is the enemies that appear to be on the verge of overcoming us. And when they do, we believe that they are going to rub our noses in it. They're going to break out in Queen, We Are the Champion, and say, you've got mud on your face, you big disgrace. You know the song. They're going to rub our noses in it. That's the way that it feels. And that's while Paul can go on to quote Hosea and taunt death in 1 Corinthians 15:5 by asking, where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? We often feel like death is winning and the sting is the pain and the loss in the present. We may know the truth of 1 Corinthians 15:55, but the problem is we feel like death is going to win. Or maybe death has won in our case and we feel like death is trying to rub our nose in it. And we need to turn to God and say, God, help. I am devastated. And laments are a great reminder. The laments are great reminders that while Romans 8:28 that says God causes all things to work together for good is true. In the face of sorrow and adversity, it probably is not the right time to quote that to someone else. Because the truth of the matter is we need to lament sometimes, and we don't always need people saying it's going to be okay. God's got this. God's going to work out everything together for the good. That's great, but right now, God, I need you to listen to me because things aren't right. Can you say that in your life? Have you said that in your life? God, it's not right. You need to fix things. And we also were reminded by lament that, one, we don't need to tell people that God needed their loved ones. That's a really bad thing to tell somebody when they just suffered loss. Because you know what? They feel like they needed their loved ones too. Why did God need them more than I did? You know, they need to be told that it's okay. It's okay to cry out in anger. It's okay to be in pain. It's okay to suffer. And when we're going through the troubles of life, we cannot always pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. Because sometimes we've lost our boots, and that's what we need to cry out to God about. And besides, that's just a really bad idea to tell somebody that anyway. Because quite frankly, we need to tell God what's wrong. And then, the third thing that we see in this particular psalm that is normal and part of the laments is that David tells God what he expects God to do. He says there is an expected answer here. But that expected answer is also an expectation of what David would do. And when we come to those times, it's a statement of what we need to do. It's a statement of trust. It's a statement of trust that God can do what we have asked God to do. It's not a statement that we believe He will. It's simply a statement that we believe that He can do what we've asked Him to do. For David, it was, "When you rescue me, I will worship." But he's saying in that, he's saying to God, he's saying, "God, I know that you can rescue me from my enemies." Whatever those enemies were, the psalmists of the other laments and David here, what they're saying is that God will act on the psalmist's behalf. We know, God, that you will do certain things for us. And we can come to God, and we can come in the midst of lament, and we can come when it seems that the world is falling apart, and we can tell God what we will do in the future. Because we believe that God will act on our behalf. We can come and we can tell God that we will worship in the assembly of the saints. We will worship because of who He is. It doesn't mean that we can pray that God is going to suddenly fix all of life's problems the way that we think He should. It simply is saying that we know that God is big enough, that God will act in a way that is beneficial. You see, in times of lament, we need to worship. Sometimes that worship is built upon what God has done in the past, not what the current situation is. Sometimes it's worship because of what we know God can do. And we know that God will do certain things, even though we don't see them now. You see, we need to learn to worship in times of trouble. And sometimes it means that we need to learn to lament itself. Sometimes we need to learn to sit in the pain and acknowledge the pain before God. Because lament teaches us that, yes, joy comes in the morning, but lament Lament forces us to remember that heartache does last for the night. Lament forces us to remember that while joy may come in the morning, that we may be sitting in the midst of night. That while God can be with the widow, that the widow still has to face the night of learning what it means to be alone. That while God may be the Father to the fatherless, that the fatherless still has to remember what it means to be orphaned. That God can be the healer, the one who needs healing still needs to face the disease. That while God can bring back the prodigal from the far land, that the father still has to wait longingly, watching the road, or even worse, standing outside inviting the other prodigal into the party again and again. But see, lament teaches us that we can truly rejoice in every situation, but to do so, we have to remember and we have to name